Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. One does not have to be especially wise or observant to know that American business does not hold the honored place in the minds of our citizens that it held 40 or 50 years ago. The majority of our people seem to think businessmen and women are greedy and unscrupulous, that they are out to fleece the public, not to provide service to the nation and its people. The average man apparently believes big business and sometimes small business intend to succeed, regardless of the cost to our national welfare, to planet Earth and its atmosphere, and to the family. Such attitudes toward business must be changed, or the future of our economic system may be in jeopardy. An anti-business attitude has been fostered by the news media, even though the media owe their very souls to American business. Our public school system often criticizes our economic system, and in some cases, promotes socialism or some other totally unworkable economic arrangement. Many American colleges and some modern pulpits have sought to make the American business community the culprit in almost all of our national ills. All of these institutions, the media, the public schools, our colleges and universities, and even the church, have a stake in the success of the American free enterprise system. Why they cannot see that is not easy to explain. Marlon Maddox's book, What Worries Parents Most, accuses the National Education Association of promoting a one-world government, of praising socialism, and of fighting American capitalism. Maddox gives this evaluation of the media's attitude toward American business. Extensive research has shown that TV and films overwhelmingly portray businessmen as greedy villains, as almost never honest, hard-working taxpayers meeting a payroll. Page 186. How absolutely inconsistent and ridiculous for the media to accuse anyone of misbehavior. The media have done more in recent years to destroy our moral values than any other single force. If the media, the educational establishment, and liberal religion continue to harp on the corruption of our economic system, the young people of America may turn against our country and our competitive free enterprise system. You would think that both the media elite and American educators would have learned their lesson about the unfairness and destructiveness of socialism when the Soviet Union and its satellites literally came apart. But many leaders in the media and in our universities seem determined to undermine our economic system by vigorously criticizing our government and promoting other political and economic forms such as socialism and communism. How often I have heard television news people praising Sweden for its advances in child care and in other facets of Swedish life. My friend, Sweden is one of the most ungodly countries on earth and thoroughly socialistic. Its tax system is one of the most oppressive in the world. Mel and Norma Gabler's book, What Are They Teaching Your Children?, cites an American high school textbook which reads, "In China, Marxism turns the people toward a future of unlimited promise, an escalator to the stars." Page 48. If that textbook were correct in its assessment of China's Marxist government, why are the Chinese people straining and working to be free of communism? Were the events in Tiananmen Square indications that Marxism was an escalator to the stars? How can any American school allow textbooks or teachers to support such moral, economic, and political imbecility? Please understand that I am not trying to defend corruption, greed, and just plain old immorality within the business community. Businessmen and women have no more right to cheat, to steal, to lie, and to disobey the law of the land than anyone else. Unfortunately, a covetous spirit of many American businessmen has provided a fertile ground for an anti-business attitude to grow. Here are some notorious examples of the ungodly dealings of some American businesses. Sears Roebuck and Company has been a part of my life since I was a little boy in Middle Tennessee. My parents were poor, with a very large family to support. They ordered many of our clothes and school supplies from Sears. My father used many of their carpentry and farm tools. It was a great disappointment to me to learn that Sears Roebuck deliberately overcharged their customers for automobile repair. Sears has been guilty of cheating its customers for years. There simply is no excuse for their fleecing the American people. It not only was morally wrong and illegal, in the long run, Sears Roebuck is a loser. Their behavior may well cause many people in the United States to lose confidence in the American business community. Wall Street has always had its crooks, just like other segments of American business. In recent years, there have been numerous prominent traders who have cheated their customers and weakened the American business society. Ivan Boesky made millions of dollars using inside information about companies and their stocks. Michael Milligan may have made as much as $600 million in 1 year by using insider information. He also was the inventor of the so-called junk bonds, which cost Americans billions of dollars. How could bankers, institutional investors, and other financiers fall for junk bonds? Were they just greedy, looking for a fast buck? A few years ago, Chrysler Corporation was indicted and proved guilty of allowing their executives to drive new cars without connecting the odometer cables. After an executive had driven a car for a few thousand miles, the odometer was connected, and then the car was sold as a new car. Chrysler pled guilty and promised not to engage in the practice anymore. What motivates a great corporation like Chrysler to deceive the public and its customers in such a fashion? The savings and loan scandals have been grievous violations of American business principles and of the law of Almighty God. The banks and saving and loan institutions I have known have taken great pride in their honesty, in their concern for their investors and depositors. How could the savings and loan associations be guilty of such abominable behavior? Millions of retired people have lost all or a great part of their savings because of the crookedness of some financial institutions. Did the presidents and other officers of the savings and loan associations believe they were above the law, that they would never have to give an accounting of their use of other people's money? It almost seems as if a conspiracy was invented by the banks and by the savings and loan associations. These are just a few of the many scandals which have rocked the world of business. They may not even be the worst ones, but they have probably received the most publicity in the last 10 or 15 years. There is no way, legally, morally, or otherwise, to justify what Sears, Chrysler, or the savings and loans have done to the American people. How many scandals can the American people countenance before they lose faith in our free enterprise system? Free enterprise does not mean that businessmen and businesswomen are free to cheat and to deceive the American public. Please understand that I am not implying, because I do not believe, that most American businessmen and women are crooked. I have given you evidence that some business people are dishonest, although you probably knew that before I mentioned it. It is my deep conviction that the majority of Americans' business people have high moral values and had rather lose their businesses than to cheat anyone. It is the other kind, the dishonest ones, who are giving American business a bad name. In spite of some evil-minded businessmen and women, our American system of competitive free enterprise has provided more goods and services at less cost than any other economic system in the history of the world. As a people, we Americans have been blessed with more creature comforts than the people of any other nation. Our political system has given more people more freedom, more incentives to work, and more protection from governmental interference than any other. Unfortunately, there are many people in government, in the media, in education, and in religion who would radically alter our political and economic arrangements. There are definite signs that our economic and political system is in deep trouble. We must not close our eyes to the flaws of our system. We must work and vote wisely to correct whatever flaws exist. We must also pray for the men and women who hold positions of power in our government. 1 Timothy 2, 1 and 2. Now I need to ask you a very vital question relating to American business. Has Charles Darwin's theory of evolution had any bearing on the ethical values which drive the American business community? Frankly, I do not know if the executives at Sears Roebuck or Chrysler or the Savings and Loan Associations are believers in the theory of evolution. I have no doubt that many of the leaders in these scandalous ventures claim to be Christians. Tragically, some of them may even try to segregate their Sunday beliefs from their daily activities. They may argue that it is wrong to steal or to cheat, but after all, business is business. The ancient Romans had a saying that business is one part of life with which religion has nothing to do. Do modern business people believe that? Our lesson today will examine in some depth the topic, evolution's influence on American business. Perhaps a little historical information on the theory of organic evolution will be helpful. In 1859, Charles Darwin published his most famous book, The Origin of Species. But Charles Darwin was not the first to believe and to promote the theory of evolution. Darwin's grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, had long believed in evolution, although his grandson is often identified as the father of modern evolution. Actually, many of the Greek philosophers and scientists had supported evolution, although they had not developed the theory to the point Darwin did. Dr. Bert Thompson's splendid book, The History of Evolutionary Thought, gives an excellent summary of the views of many of the ancient scientists and philosophers. Dr. Thompson quotes J.B. Birdsall as saying that Thales of Miletus, who lived between 640 and 546 B.C., was the first ancient to leave a record of an orderly approach to the interpretation of natural phenomena. He broke away from the mythological explanations and expressed belief that all life had originated in and rose out of the waters of the sea. Pages 28 and 29. Actually, Thales was promoting a myth just as great and just as fallacious as any which had gone before and was accepted by his generation. My friends, evolution is a myth, a godless and destructive myth, not a fact. Dr. Thompson affirms that Aristotle, Plato's famous student, left the greatest mark on evolutionary thought through the ages. Although Aristotle believed in some sort of design in the universe, he accepted and promoted the theory of evolution. He believed there was a gradual biological development from simple to complex forms of life. Pages 33 and 34. What we have said about Thales and about Aristotle could also be said about dozens of other Greek thinkers. But it was Charles Darwin's writings which became the rage of many colleges and universities, and, oddly enough, in many pulpits throughout the world, especially in the United Kingdom and in the United States. Virtually every college and university in this nation readily embraced Darwin's theory. There were some notable exceptions among biologists, zoologists, and physicists, such as Louis Agassiz and William Dana. Dr. Michael Denton's monumental book, Evolution, a Theory in Crisis, quotes these words from Louis Agassiz, one of Harvard's greatest zoology professors. "The living world shows also premeditation, wisdom, greatness, omniscience, providence. All these facts proclaim aloud the one God whom man may know. And natural history must, in good time, become the analysis of the thoughts of the Creator of the universe, as manifested in the animal and vegetable kingdoms, as well as in the inorganic world." Page 20. Louis Agassiz spoke of premeditation, providence, and omniscience. Evolutionists speak of chance. Agassiz believed in God. Evolutionists believe in nothing. The differences between Bible believers and evolutionists cannot be reconciled. But it was not just the college and university professors who were enamored by Darwinism. So were many theologians and other religious leaders. Some of America's most influential preachers, notably Henry Ward Beecher and Harry Emerson Fosdick, embraced evolution and promoted it with all their might. In this respect, I am reminded of a statement made by Dr. Walter Kaiser of Trinity Evangelical Seminary about a disagreement he had had with Dr. F.F. Bruce, a distinguished English scholar. Dr. Kaiser mentioned the disagreement and then said that Dr. Bruce has gone on to his final reward. By this time, Dr. Kaiser said, Dr. Bruce has learned that he was wrong. I would say the same about Beecher and Fosdick. Now that they are dead, they unquestionably know that they were wrong about the theory of evolution. These two forces, the academic community and the religious establishment, converted millions of Americans, especially so-called intellectuals, to Darwinian evolution. The consequences of that conversion have virtually destroyed moral values in our great nation. If we are descended from monkeys and apes, as the evolutionists teach, why should we observe any laws which do not please us? If we are merely animals, how can we ever arrive at any absolute values? Evolution cannot prove any right or wrong, even though many evolutionists, such as Anthony Flew, have tried. What do evolutionists believe about man? Phil Donahue's book, The Human Animal, informs us of our animal ancestry. Phil wonders out loud about man's inhumanity to man. But he ought to know, if we are merely animals, why we act like animals. Phil Donahue believes, as do all knowledgeable evolutionists, that man descended from the lower animals and is an animal and always will be. Could his belief in evolution explain why he glorifies prostitution, abortion, transsexualism, transvestism, homosexuality, and similar evils on his television program? If man is an animal, he cannot be governed by God's moral law. We never accuse a dog or a cow of having violated some moral principle. Are men nothing more than dogs or cats or horses? Phil Donahue's book has not had the influence he probably hoped it would. But Desmond Morris, a well-known English zoologist, wrote a book similar to Phil's. Morris's book, The Naked Ape, has had an enormous impact on the world, especially on the academic community. Morris declares that man is the naked ape and is an animal. If man is an animal, why should anyone be surprised when he acts like an animal? Darwin denied the realm of the supernatural. He did not believe in God Almighty, although his early training was in the field of theology. He denied divine creation and sought to develop a naturalistic scheme to explain the existence of the universe, including man. He did not accept the inspiration of the Bible, the deity of Christ, or any other fundamental doctrine of New Testament Christianity. He succeeded in removing from millions of people any hope for time or for eternity. Once God and His Word had been removed from the minds of a great number of people, they had no reason for being good. I know there are atheists, agnostics, and secular humanists who will deny that fact, but they are not being honest with themselves or with their followers. Let me give you two examples. Dr. Henry Morris's book, The Long War Against God, quotes Dr. Will Durant, a humanist, and the author of a monumental set of books on the history of philosophy, as saying, "By offering evolution in the place of God as a cause of history, Darwin removed the theological basis of the moral code of Christendom. And a moral code that has no fear of God is very shaky. That's the condition we're in. I don't think man is capable yet of managing social order and individual decency without fear of some supernatural being overlooking him and able to punish him." Page 149. Dr. Morris Storer, a former professor of philosophy from the University of Florida, edited a book, Humanist Ethics, which attempts to develop a code of ethics without God. Dr. Durant wrote one chapter in Storer's book in which he said, "We shall find it no easy task to mold a natural ethic strong enough to maintain moral restraint and social order without the support of supernatural consolations, hopes, and fears." Page 8. Incidentally, Dr. Durant was an atheist. Yet he recognized that without God there is no foundation for ethics. Every man should be free, according to humanism, to do what is right in his own eyes. If God has been thrown overboard, what is to be the basis of human conduct? Charles Darwin argued for a doctrine he called the survival of the fittest. Most scientists of our day know the doctrine is absolutely false, although most scientists apparently still believe in evolution. Actually, the expression survival of the fittest does not explain anything. Yet many scientists, philosophers, and even businessmen accepted the doctrine as if it came from on high. While I am concerned about what scientists and philosophers believe and teach, my main concern in our discussion today is the effect that survival of the fittest has had on businessmen. I shall mention just four prominent businessmen who are unquestionably influenced by belief in Darwinian evolution. Dr. Henry Morris mentions Chauncey Depew, a 19th century railroad magnate who asserted that the men who attained fame, fortune, and power in New York City represented the survival of the fittest. Page 56. Another railroad baron, James L. Hill, alleged that the fortunes of railroad companies are determined by the law of the survival of the fittest. Page 56. John D. Rockefeller was one of the most unprincipled and ruthless men ever to operate a major corporation in the United States. This staunch evolutionist said, "This is not an evil tendency in business. It is merely the working out of a law of nature and a law of God." Page 56. While I was in a meeting a few years ago in Indiana, Pennsylvania, I visited the place where Andrew Carnegie lived and made his fortune through conniving, running over people, and just plain cruelty. He is honored today as a great philanthropist, but he really was a heartless and cruel businessman. Carnegie wrote, "I remember that light came in as a flood and all was clear. Not only had I got rid of theology and the supernatural, but I had found the truth of evolution. The law of competition is here. We cannot evade it. No substitutes for it have been found. And while the law may sometimes be hard for the individual, it is best for the race, because it ensures the survival of the fittest in every department. Page 56. My friends, I am not saying to you that every crooked businessman or woman is dishonest because he or she believes in and has internalized Darwin's view of human origin. Many of our unscrupulous business people are just plain mean. They did not learn it from Charles Darwin. Some of them have never heard of Charles Darwin. But the philosophy of Darwin is being promoted in our schools from kindergarten through the university. Most of us see evolution on television programs and read it in our daily newspapers. Oh, the theory of evolution may not be mentioned, but we can easily get the impression that we live in a dog-eat-dog world, that only the most ruthless survive. How else can you account for some of the atrocities in the world of business? My friends, we thank you for listening today. We're grateful for your constant support of this radio program. Thank you, and may God bless you.